And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here.
All righty then. Here we go on a Monday with the band back together. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is your show. Of note, as we get ramped up for mandatory minicamp, and we'll get to all the details regarding that, Jordan Poyer, among other things. But Steve is back off a jet-setting cross-continental vacation.
Boom diggity. How's it going? Good to be back. Hey, I'm kind of buzzing because I'm trying to overcompensate for the jet lag that I'm kind of experiencing right now. But it is not.
What is that, plus, four time zones or three?
Four.
It is four. Yeah,
it's four. And we're in Anchorage, Alaska, and got back yesterday at noon after not sleeping at all on Saturday night because we took a red eye and I was watching movies. I watched like three movies. So I can't sleep on planes. Never have.
And I'm not good at it either.
So I powered through yesterday, went to bed early last night, and then woke up earlier this morning, and I'm kind of fighting it.
Yeah.
I think tomorrow's going to be the day. That's usually the day that really crushes you.
Oh, you're going to feel like you got hit with a hammer?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Is it the second day all the time? Because
I've
done a couple of trips like that, and I'm usually okay after that first day. You get hit on the second day, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think.
Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow then.
Right. I'm pre-prepared. And it's also, too, for those of people.
Just get ready to put the show on my back.
People who are listening to us don't care about this, but we're radio only today, which is a little bit transformative for us in our delivery. So it's
very much so.
We're sitting in a different spot, and we're actually able to watch Jay Harris do his work. It's actually a little bit of a thrill here today.
When we do the show,
watch our producer Jay Harris work.
When we simulcast the show, radio and TV, we're in a studio with the doors closed and the control rooms on the other side of those doors.
We have no windows, no
glass partition or anything to see what the guys in the control room are doing until it's the break and we get up and go in and say, "Hey, what's going on in here?"
Right.
We heard some cackling, behind the door.
What?
What hairy hijinks are going on back here while we're actually working,
Right. Yeah, so today's a little different, but nice to be back,
Jay Can't
Brownie, and it's, I know, thanks to all the people who filled in for me while I was gone.
Yeah, we had some good help last week, and we appreciate it as always.
I was traveling. We were in Alaska, like I said, and also we were in Atlanta on the way out. So.
Yeah, only A destinations, apparently, on this trip, Atlanta and Anchorage. So
that's right.
So good to have you back.
We did not go to Altoona, however.
No, so. that would be an option, sure. I'm sure there's an innumerable number of cities with an A, at the start of it. So, yes, and let's not go down that list now. We could be here all day. But the news came down this morning, courtesy of ESPN's Adam Schefter, that Bills All-Pro safety Jordan Poyer will attend the Bills mandatory minicamp this week, despite still seeking a contract extension. As he enters the last year on his current deal, 31 years old, Bills have been in communication with Drew Rosenhaus, Poyer's agent, according to Schefter. So we'll see where it goes. I just know that as of right now, and I realize you can always move the money around and, fix the numbers. We've seen the Rams do it time and again. But the Bills right now, I think, are about 5.5 under the cap. We know that Brandon, as a rule, likes to have about $5 million in cap space as a safety net in the event that you need to go out and sign players because of a rash of injuries should it happen. Now, for the better part of the last 3 years, that hasn't happened for the Bills. They've been extraordinarily fortunate, but you always have to have that in place to cover yourself in the event that such an occurrence takes place. So you're going to have to get pretty creative if you want to put Jordan Poyer in a place where he is satisfied with whatever a new deal might entail, if there even is one.
And the fact that he's here, to me, it's a little bit of a non-story because mandatory, he's going to show up. And it's a mini camp, no question. And nobody there's no team in the league that takes care of its players better than the Bills take care of it. So it's not mm-hmm. like he's going to come in and risk injury or anything. Plus, it gives him a chance to make sure he stays up to speed mentally with the calls and checks, the adjustment packages that they're going to put in, and new verbiage that they're going to add, new philosophies and new guys. All the volunteer stuff that we've seen in the last month and a half, you guys, can you shrug your shoulder? Yeah. You know, and we've seen guys too. Well, we saw Josh do it. Josh did it. He took off, went to the match.
Right.
So
to his credit, he did take the red eye back and was back the next day.
Yeah, but the point is, that stuff is, it's team building. It's, you know, doing all that stuff. It's not really, some of it's substantive, particularly for the young guys and the new guys. But for Jordan Poyer to show up for this, I think it's fine. He's going to, and I would be surprised as well if there's any acrimony or any bad feelings going into the season, even if a deal does not get done.
Yeah, I mean, we talked to Brandon Bean here last week when he had a press conference, and he was asked about the Poyer situation, and the way he spoke about it didn't give anybody the sense that there was any acrimony involved in any of the dialogue that had happened between the two parties to this point. So it wasn't as if he was saying, oh, well, I don't know if he's going to be here next week. He kind of made it sound like, I have no indication that Jordan Poyer won't be here next week.
Right.
And the way he kind of described everything, you made it feel like, you know what, it's okay right now. It looks like both sides are being patient with how to handle and rectify this.
Yeah.
If
he has told them already and said, hey, I'll come in for this stuff, but when training camp starts, if I don't have a deal or if I'm not satisfied with the way it's going, I'm not going to come. He might have said that. I doubt that, but he might.
Well, he might, but it's going to be pretty costly. I mean, you're looking to get more money. Right now, the fines.
It's like 50 grand a day.
50 grand a day.
A day. Imagine that, folks.
Even for guys on their rookie contract, it's 40 grand a day.
Yeah.
But veteran players are 50 grand a day.
Yeah.
If he missed the first day of minicamp tomorrow, it would have been almost 16 grand. That's the fine for day one.
Right.
And then it goes up from there precipitously.
Okay, so. He's probably not going to hold out, I think, but we've seen this as well. They show up and don't participate. They're there, so they don't get fined,
right.
But they don't do anything, and they're become more of a problem than they are. It'd be interesting to see how Sean McDermott handled that in that environment, because you don't want anybody who's not rowing the boat in the same direction as everybody else in training camp, particularly in a year like this when the expectations are sky high. That's when it could get dicey. But I think the Bills will, if they want to do it right, I say right, in a way that will allow Jordan to express himself. Because you don't – I think Sean McDermott would go to so far as to say, you know what, if Jordan's going to hold out and or if he's going to show up and not participate, let's excuse him from camp.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I don't know if I don't know if they can do that for training camp.
Yeah,
there might be a provision in the new CBA. I believe there's a provision in the new CBA. Oh, I know what it is. You cannot waive a fine.
Right,
fines cannot be rescinded.
But they can
once you get to training camp.
But they could just say
so. They are hard and fast.
Yes, but if he's not required to be there, if they say you're excused from camp, we don't expect you to be here. That's different.
I don't know if it absolves the fine, though.
We'll see.
I gotta go read the
because
fine
certainly
print
they're not finding guys to go home for. They're not finding guys to go home for because here's the thing: Jordan said, "Listen, I'd love to be there, but the club doesn't want me there right now." That's different because it would be a leadership move by Sean McDermott. Say, listen, if a guy's gonna be here and he's not gonna be happy, he ain't gonna help us. In fact, he's gonna hurt us. It's gonna be counterproductive. Let's keep him out of the mix. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think it would get to that point with Poyer.
Yeah, I don't either.
Knowing the relationship that he
But if you're going to explore the option, that's something when we get a minute, we should ask Brandon Bean about if we see him out and about the building. Of course, he might say, listen, guys, it's not going to get to that. We're going to get a deal done. Or, you know, he might say, I don't know. he might say something else. It's an interesting scenario, though, because if I'm Sean McDermott, and we've seen other teams do it more so nowadays than ever before, where a guy one day is the first inkling you get that he's unhappy, The next day he's gone. They traded him.
I'd be surprised with that scenario.
I've said it a million times, and I'll say it again. This game demands your full attention and full emotional content.
Full buy-in.
You gotta be ready to lay it on the line physically. You can't even let your foot off the gas. So if you get a guy like that in there, particularly a guy at Poyer's spot, where you know somebody who's a starting defensive player, you got to have a guy that's bought in. And a guy that's a lesser player who is 100% bought in is better for you than a greater player who's not bought in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think you'll see teams with that kind of attitude. I wouldn't be surprised if they just decide to do that. And if Jordan says, listen, guys, I'm not going to be happy without a new deal, and the Bills are saying, listen, we can't do it.
I think it would surprise some people if it ever came to that, knowing the partnership that has existed in the back of that secondary for the better part of the last 5 years,
yeah,
between Poyer and Hyde, and knowing that Poyer's in the last year of his deal, I believe Hyde might be as well. I think they both know. This could be their last look at it together.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean that's... Hyde is 32. Poyer is going to turn 32. I know they're great, and they've been great.
Oh, sure.
But we know that – we also know that Father Time
– here's the thing
– is undefeated.
This may have more to do with Jaquan Johnson and Josh Thomas than it does Jordan Poyer.
And DeMar Hamlin.
You know what I'm saying, Brownie?
If they're not ready.
Or maybe they are.
Well, even if they are, this is a go for the whole banana deal.
I get that. But if you're saying.
Hold on a second. Before you go any further, let me say this. You are in a go for it all type season. You want as many surefire bets as you can put on the field and on your sideline. You've already got a new special teams coordinator, even though Matthew Smiley's been here for 5 years. And a new
offensive
offensive coordinator who's never done it before. And then you have all the other changes that have taken place, left guard, defensive front, all of this stuff.
All that, yeah.
Do you want, and you're going to have a new cornerback starting on the outside opposite Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White isn't a lock yet to be ready week one. So there is a fair amount of newness, inexperience, and uncertainty. You want to, if you have the opportunity to get Poyer locked in and ready for this season, aren't you doing that? Because you're trying to check as many boxes as you can to give yourself the best chance to get to that big game. And Poyer's the better option right now.
You'd always want to do that, and you would try and do it every year like that. But every year's going to have at least as many questions as they do this
year.
At least as many changes.
This one's avoidable, though, if you can get to the common ground.
Yeah, but here's the thing, too. That's why I said it's about, you know, DeMar Hamlin and these guys. What if you get into training camp, and they've been holding DeMar Hamlin off or Jaquan Johnson off because they don't want to make that change? It's like
he's ready.
He's been ready. What if he's been ready?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're saying, listen, we love Jordan. And there's no question they do. I mean, we know it. We've heard it privately and publicly that they love the guy. But you're talking about a move that, you know, it's like he got a, you know, all these guys. You got Von Miller. You got, you know, Josh. You got Tremaine Edmonds coming up. All of these guys. It's like, football-wise, we're going to be pretty good with or without him. That's the question. That's why I say if these guys that we've been waiting on for now 3 years.
Yeah.
And they still haven't gone anywhere, but they're still sitting there waiting to get on the field. I'm saying that could be a contributing factor to saying, you know, Jordan, we got a fourth-round pick for you.
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed to believe they genuinely feel they are better with a first-year starter than with a first-team All-Pro at the safety position,
absolutely,
which is a gigantic role in this
Think about
defense.
This now. If you're going to try and stay competitive.
Let alone a team captain.
I get the expectations this year, Brownie. No question about it. They're high, and they should be. But this, we've also heard this. This is a team, you know, they this. It's nice this year, but we're going to be, we want to be back right here next year as well.
Yeah.
When would Jordan Poyer's stock be higher than it is now? Right? Only if he plays as well as he did this last year and win the Super Bowl, right? I mean, it would take a home, right? But even so, you may not get through this year because, you know, you got to give him a contract. It's going to cost you, whatever. Is there another team? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't think Jordan wants to go anywhere. And this is all scenarios that we're kind of conjuring up. And if there's nothing that's going to be done, and what would happen to the Bills if it didn't get done. But man, oh man, you know, that you start thinking about what are the other options of if a deal doesn't get done, or if the Bills don't want to do a deal, or if they can't do a deal. And it's, you know, it comes down to the guys who are there, your other options on the football field, mm-hmm. and a partner in a trade or something like that, and Jordan's ability or willingness to do that. You know, it might be that Poyer just says, you know what, okay, how about this? I'll play on this deal, but after this year, I'm a free. You got to make me a free agent. You got to give me the money, and you got to guarantee my money and get me out.
I think he is up after this year,
right.
Anyway. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the business side of that comes down, but he will be here tomorrow, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. He is not alone. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson showed up at the Ravens facility this morning. He has not been on hand for the voluntary OTAs, much the way Poyer has not attended voluntary OTAs here in Buffalo. He is looking for a contract extension to be worked out with the club. So he's still waiting on that, but is at mandatory minicamp for the Ravens. If for some reason one cannot be reached, he would be playing this year under the fifth-year option from his rookie deal. The one player who is not planning to be at his team's mandatory minicamp is Washington Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin. That, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, McLaurin is also seeking a contract extension consistent with other comparable wide receivers that recently signed. So basically, the Washington Commanders can thank the Miami Dolphins for, you know, knocking over the apple cart here and prompting every wide receiver of any kind of ilk or ranking number one in the pecking order on their respective team to come back to their club with their hand out saying, where's mine? The market's changed.
Yeah.
And that's what Washington has right now. There are reports out of Washington, not from Schefter, local reporters in Washington are indicating that there has been dialogue to try to broker a new agreement, but it does not appear like anything is imminent right now for Terry McLaurin. And this is an interesting part of the whole negotiation, Steve. I'm sure that Washington's front office has taken a look at the wide receiver landscape. We know that Cooper Kupp just signed his deal, and a host of other number ones either had their deals redone. So Washington's front office is obviously looking and saying, all right, is there anybody between now and training camp that could get a new deal at the wide receiver position to keep driving this market up? I don't really see it. Oh, okay. Well, all right, let's just see if we can slowly but surely get something ironed out with McLaurin. I'll tell you, as much as Tyreek Hill's deal hurt the rest of the league in resetting the market at an almost artificial level for the wide receiver position, Kupp's deal helped NFL clubs because he didn't ask for top-of-the-market money. He felt what he got was fair, whether you feel that's right, wrong, or indifferent. I know NFL agents probably weren't thrilled with it, but that at least helps a little bit because that guy was the most productive receiver in football last year.
Absolutely.
Receptions, receiving yards.
Yeah. He hit the triple crown.
Yeah. Touchdowns.
So it's all the ability to communicate. Now, agents are good at this. Obviously, it's their job. They got to go in there and accentuate what their guy does, what he meant. And what? Here's the thing. Usually the way the balance works, Brownie, is this. Our guy meant this to your club. And in many ways, that's That's their weight of their argument. You couldn't have done what you did last year without our guy. The club comes back and says, well, look at, you know, what he's doing in comparison to these guys. You know, he wasn't in the top 50 in this category. You know, So the club puts him in a wider spectrum of players.
Yeah, different comps.
Yeah. And the way, and what you said about Cup is really interesting, because there's a guy who got the new deal on the heels of one of the great seasons ever.
Yeah.
I mean,
their value couldn't have been higher.
Couldn't have been higher. And Tyreek Hill is, and we've always said, you know, he's kind of a unicorn. He can run faster than anybody in the league, which it's a league full of fast people, and he is strikingly fast.
Yeah, he's two or three steps faster than everybody else, not one.
And it's not just that guys can match his speed, but they can't get to that speed in two steps like he does.
Yeah.
When they start out, he explodes away from people, and then they kind of, you know, they can kind of close a little bit. They can't do that to anybody else. I mean, Tyreek is a different cat. There's just no question about it. Like him or hate him, despite what he's saying about Tua and Pat Mahomes in the media and all of that, and down in Miami, he's going to be in a different team. That cat is different. So they're paying for that gift a little bit, and teams will try and spin it that way. You can't do what Tyreek does, so we're not going to pay you like Tyreek gets paid. It's a little bit of a veiled argument, but it's there.
Yeah,
it's there, and then it's up to the agent and the player to say, well, wait a minute, you know, Tyreek can't do what I do. And I'll say, yeah, well, prove it. You know, how are you going to do that? That's the argument, and that's where you're going to get with guys like McClure, and that's where you're going to get with guys like, you know, like Steph Diggs, and he got his extension, all that stuff. You know, all the guys, you can name all the receivers. They're going to get monster money. And the market is always, always, always going to be reset by the newest contract. So, you know, that when you see a guy who is different than Cooper Kupp setting the market like we've been talking about, that's when teams are going, wait a minute, how are we going to get out from under this guy? Because our guy's better than that guy. How are we gonna look him in the eye and tell him he's not better than that guy? Because if he is, like we think he is, we got to pay him that? That's when you get teams like going, we're just not going to do it. We're just not going to do it.
We did notice that the Chiefs added a piece back to their offense that played a pretty sizable role for them last year in the playoffs. Running back Jerick McKinnon, who was still a free agent as of yesterday, has re-signed with the Chiefs, 1-year deal. In the playoffs, Steve, McKinnon just took over the starting running back role and was extraordinarily productive for them. Basically played in three postseason games, 315 total yards, 165 receiving, 150 rushing on 48 touches. And he's 30 years old, but in this league, and with the way the Chiefs play, it's not like he's getting worn down from running the ball. They don't do a whole lot of that. And he certainly proved himself as a dangerous threat out of the backfield. So he might be 30, but he's not going to get a workload that might lead to diminishing returns. Because we know a lot of running backs that tote the mail tend to fall off a cliff after age 28. He's essentially a part-time running back. He's more of a pass receiver in that offense.
What's wrong with their other guy?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Helaire, yeah.
Small, and he's injured a lot.
Yeah, that's the interesting part to me.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be a committee backfield at the end of the day.
The Chiefs, for me, that's their philosophy of building their team. We're going to get the best possible players we can offensively to surround our quarterback, and we're going to have depth and quality depth to boot, because when we get into these games, if you're losing, you got to have the horses to come back and win it. So do you not see that too? I mean, their defense is okay. We'll get a couple of guys. Maybe we'll pay one or two guys. You know, whatever. We're just going to put some guys out there.
Yeah, Chris Jones, a couple other guys.
Who's playing corner for them? Right. They lost Tyrann Mathieu. Gone.
Right.
he was their best defensive back, and certainly maybe their best defensive player. And he's gone. They were starting. I mean, their safeties were atrocious last year.
Right. They still have Thornhill back there, who's a nice player.
They just do not spend any real resources, certainly not enough resources, in my opinion, on a defense. And maybe it's their philosophy, like we've said, you know, they can't play defense anyway in the league because of the atmosphere in the league and the way it's been officiated. Let's just score.
So I forgot this. They also added Ronald Jones from Tampa to their running back room. So that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jerick McKinnon, Ronald Jones. It's going to be a committee backfield. They did replace Tyrann Mathieu with the Houston free agent Justin Reed, 3-year deal for $31.5 million. Younger player, good athlete.
I just think they lost
Charvarius Ward, the corner, you know, as you mentioned.
Right.
And they lost Tyrann Mathieu. They also waved goodbye to Daniel Sorensen, who was getting chopped up.
He was bad.
A million different. He can't cover. He's a box safety.
He's
15 years too late to the league. He can't cover. They lost DeMarcus Robinson to Las Vegas. Jaron Reed is in Green Bay, their defensive lineman. And Melvin Ingram left after a half season there. He's in Miami. Veteran cornerback Mike Hughes went to Detroit. They franchised Orlando Brown at tackle. So, you know, they turned it over. And obviously they lost Tyreek Hill.
Why wouldn't you turn it over defensively for them? But in my take is this. They are focused solely every offseason on the offense, keeping it good, getting it better. Depth and quality depth. Because their philosophy is, if you have injuries, okay, but if you got depth, who cares?
Yeah.
Plus, if you lose guys on the defensive side of the football and you can't stop people, at least your offense can keep up with a guy like Mahomes. And if we support Mahomes, he can score with anybody in any situation, right? So I think, and it makes some sense when you think about it, if you can sustain a bunch of injuries. You know, obviously, if Mahomes gets hurt, everything comes apart. But if you can sustain a bunch of injuries and you got these guys anyway and just keep rolling offensively through, at least you can score points in these games and win games and force other teams to score to keep up with you or at least not be able to run off and leave you. So I think Kansas City is kind of setting the trend for what we've been talking about or talk about once in a while on this show. They're not even allowing you to play defense, so Kansas City's not spending any money worrying about it.
Yeah. I mean, they still have Chris Jones and Frank Clark up front. They signed Derek Nnadi in free agency. They drafted George Karlaftis, the Purdue pass rusher.
Think about this now.
And they also drafted Trent McDuffie to play nickel corner for them.
Yeah, and think about it. If you get into these games and certainly you can make whatever argument you can, but that's we've been talking about it, and it's going to get worse. The Bills, for instance, had the number one defense in a ton of different categories last year. We talk about it all offseason. And what would people talk about the Bills? They're talking about Josh and Diggs and the offense. Now, even in the media, their defense, it was unspectacular, and they were the number one defense in the league.
And they added
you
Von
can't
Miller.
Even play defense anymore. If you don't have a pass rush that gets sacks and all that stuff and catches people's eye, nobody cares about defense. That's the state that they're in right now. So it's about trying to
slow the bleeding, basically, is what defense in the NFL is now.
Yeah, compare, and I'm not one of those old, you know me, I love the league, I love where it's at, it's fun to watch, it's the best thing going, and it's evolved to this spot. But you get these old guys like me, other guys like me who are bitter, they're like going, it's professional track and field.
Yeah.
You know?
I get
it. It's a 7-on-7 league, and I get it. But that's why they're coaching and picking their rosters the way they are, is because it is that atmosphere in the league. The Bills had the number one defense in the league last year, and you couldn't tell by watching it.
Yeah. Well, there were some weeks. I mean, they had a shutout against Houston.
They had two shutouts in the first 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah. So
that really goes a long way, in a league like this. But am I You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It's an offensive league. I don't think anybody would debate that for a second. We have to take a break here. We do want to let you know that the Twitter poll is out for you. Twitter question today, what do you want to hear about from day one of Bills minicamp tomorrow? Like, what would be an encouraging thing you're hoping to hear about Bills minicamp tomorrow? You already know that Poyer is expected to be there, so that's off the table. Give us some other development that you hope to hear come tomorrow when we're covering training camp for you. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Hey, welcome back. One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Monday, the day before Bills mandatory minicamp. And we've been kind of going around the league a little bit. I know Steve touched on this a little bit, but let's address this very quickly. When comparing quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes and Tua Tagovailoa in an interview on some podcast over the weekend or late last week, Tyreek Hill said, accuracy-wise, I'm going with Tua all day. This ruffled people's feathers and made people go, what? Where is Tua better than Patrick Mahomes in any category? But I will say this. First of all, I think we know what this is. This is an exercise in a receiver in a new place trying to pump the tires on his quarterback, who he's going to be playing with for the foreseeable future. So that's part one of this. Part two, he's not wrong. If Tua is anything, he's accurate when he throws the football. Now, people will point to statistics, which I think some of them are using it in a vacuum. They're like, oh, on passes of over 20 yards, Tua had the highest completion percentage in the league of 50%. Well, he only threw 29 passes over 20 yards all of last season. Of course his percentage is going to be high. Yeah. Increase the sample size and let's see what we get then. But I will say, if not for anything, you know, on the short to intermediate passing game, he's an accurate thrower. He's an accurate thrower. Is he more accurate than Patrick Mahomes? I don't know.
It's never been about that with Tua. It's never been about his ability to read the defense or anything. His problem is his arm is not strong.
Yeah.
He's
driving the ball down.
He throws darts, but unfortunately, the footballs that he throws also have feathers on them, just like his darts do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the things, they flutter.
They do.
And they. I've said it a ton, and people here in Buffalo get tired of me hearing it. You and I go down. I don't know if you do. I'm on the field, pregame and all of that stuff. You go down and watch these quarterbacks, all these players. You get a chance to size them up, standing close to them while they're warming up and doing stuff. And you go down and you watch Josh Allen warm up, and he's a different cat. He's big. He's athletic. When he spins and it comes out, the thing whistles.
And it's effortless.
Yeah, and he makes it look like if he's a golfer, he's on the putting green and he's zinging it, right?
Yeah.
And then you look at the other guy, and there's some quarterbacks out there who are like, oh, okay, I see, he's pretty good. Joe Burrows of the world, the Justin Herberts of the world. And you go down the list, you know, all these guys, even Zach Wilson, you know, he can sling it. You know, he's got a pretty good arm. He's got a live arm. All these guys. And then you go down there on a game where you're playing against the Miami Dolphins, and you look over there, and their backup quarterback, whoever it may be, looks like he's got as good or maybe a better arm than Tua does. His ball doesn't have velocity on it. It doesn't spin out of there. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's left-handed. But he's a small guy who really has to work it to get the ball out there. That's where all this criticism of Tua, that's it. Plus, he doesn't run real good. He's not fast when he does run. You think usually a guy in the NFL who's a little smaller guy, they can scoot. Whoever it is, Russ Wilson, he can scoot.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys, you know, Kyler Murray, he can fly.
Yep.
Tua can't do that either.
Nope.
So there's a couple of key ingredients that are missing from his skill set that cause people who follow the NFL to go, he's not the guy. He's not the guy. Now, Miami people see the other stuff, the stuff that we're not really interested in watching. And I'm like, okay, all right, yeah, okay. The ball comes out on time. He knows what he's looking at. He can put it in a tight window, and he does it consistently. Good. But man, oh man, you can't throw the football down the field very far. And if you get in on him athletically, he has a hard time extending the play. And in this day and age in the NFL, if your quarterback can't extend the play and put the fear of him taking off and running into your defense, people are like, they're done with that kind of stuff.
Well, and if he's ever doing that, people are looking to size him up and put a lick on him.
Well,
sure,
yeah,
because
that's...
he's not a big guy. People think twice about cracking Josh coming at you with a full head of steam at 6'5".
Yeah, you get a corner. Corners are going to come in going low. They're not going to take Josh on. They'll get trucked.
Yeah.
But they'll
For what it's worth, because, you know, Pro Football Focus sometimes has its good or its bad in terms of some of the statistical information they come up with through film study. But they have adjusted completion percentage. For Mahomes last year, it was 78.3%. That ranked second in the league last season. Tagovailoa's adjusted completion percentage of 75.3% ranked 18th, for what it's worth. So that's a completion percentage that takes into account how many balls are catchable, et cetera, and factors in the equation that way. Just, you know, whatever. The other interesting thing that I saw, Steve, was the potentially messy situation involving L.A. Chargers ownership regarding the Spanos family. I don't know if you saw that, but L.A. Chargers owner Dean Spanos has been accused of misogynistic behavior, self-dealing, and repeated breaches of fiduciary duty by his sister in a lawsuit that escalates the siblings' ongoing legal battle over control of the team. Lawsuit filed last Thursday in San Joaquin County Superior Court, and his sister, Dia Spanos Berberian, is seeking sole control of a family trust that constitutes more than one-third of the Chargers' ownership. The suit also asks the court to suspend and remove Spanos as a co-trustee and seeks unspecified financial damages awarded to Berberian, his sister. So this is sticky, to say the least, but Spanos, his sister, and their siblings, Michael and Alexandra, each own 15% of the Chargers, with 36% managed by the family trust. The rest of the remaining 4% is owned by non-family members. So they have a couple of minority owners. But they were the brother and sister were left as co-trustees after their dad,
Alex
died in 2018. So,
it's kind of, and it's been that way. It's been a little bit like that in the Denver changeover as well.
Yeah, with that, with the Bolin family.
With the Bolin family. One of the daughters, there was a few things that they had to do to get in a position where they could be considered by the trustee to handle the team's affairs. But it never happened, and they were obviously just forced to sell. Yeah, you start dealing with a thing like the NFL, and you've got family members involved, and yeah, not every family's perfect.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's, you got brothers and sisters suing each other. That's not good.
No. And I mean, they're not the only franchise with issues, and we'll be talking to NFL Network's Judy Batista in the second hour of the show. She'll be attending the upcoming owners' meetings, and we'll be asking her about what's going to happen with Daniel Snyder and the Washington Commanders, because the last we heard at the May owners' meetings, a lot of the other owners were doing a straw poll to see if they had enough votes to get Daniel Snyder out.
Right.
So we'll see if she's got any updates on where that could stand. This Spanos thing that came up with the Chargers now. So there's a bunch of different issues that the league may or may not address. Some of these things, they may just say, hey, we're tabling that. We'll get to that later. We got some more pressing stuff over here. But we'll check in with Judy Batista, second hour of the show, and find out exactly what is what. She also had some Bill's mentions in some of her most recent content on NFL.com. We'll be asking her about that as well. We got a little bit of time here for the tweet sheet, Steve, so let's do that. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, as we take a look at some of the replies, as we have been asking, basically, when mandatory minicamp opens tomorrow, what do you want to hear about day one? What is your ideal story coming out of day one of mandatory minicamp? Steve says, I want to hear what Rousseau, Epinesa, and Basham look like at practice. A jump in production from these guys could make this defense an all-time elite NFL defense. And while I think anybody would be interested in hearing how those young pass rushers are doing, as Leslie Frazier pointed out last week, Steve, it's really hard for linemen to shine in this kind of a football setting where there are no pads.
That's right.
And it's helmets. It's not full contact. They're protecting themselves from each other. It's that kind of chemistry, you know, in terms of guys playing off one another, how much their game is advanced. I don't know if it's really going to be realized or witnessed until we get to training camp and certainly the preseason, right?
Right. You can't. You're not going to be. Now, the only way, I mean, certainly nobody in the media is going to know what they're looking at when they're watching the offensive linemen out there in shorts and T-shirts, even in pads. They're not going to be that competitive here. There's not going to be any banging around kind of stuff, even if they go full gear. But the simple fact of the matter is the only way you know that somebody is shining in these environments is when you get word from one of the assistant coaches that say, that guy right there, you know, he did this. He's doing this. That guy's something different. This guy's something different. This guy over here is something. And it'll be completely off everybody else's radar. You could have the entire media, fleet of media people here in Western New York out there watching every minute of practice. The only way you really know is when the assistant coaches are like going, that's the guy.
Yeah. Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll get some more thoughts on the tweet sheet. And there is a very interesting approach being taken, Steve, by the host nation of the upcoming World Cup this fall. Let's just say they operate in a very restrictive world. They plan fully to impose those restrictions on the world that will be descending on the country of Qatar,
really?
Or Qatar, depending on how you choose to pronounce it. Both are acceptable, but I will be passing along some pretty eye-popping details when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, we are back, and as I mentioned to Steve, we know that the upcoming World Cup is going to be held in Qatar or Qatar. Either pronunciation is acceptable. And the World Cup host, this host nation, has a very restrictive society, shall we say, Steve. So they are already fully aware that the world is literally going to descend on their country to attend the matches and all of that. They are already threatening shocking and severe punishments for certain behaviors as it gears up for the group stage matches coming up in November. Fans caught with drugs, Steve, in that country,
all right,
could face the death penalty, according to like, Qatari law.
So you get caught holding a joint, your head's coming off.
Could happen. Could face the death penalty.
Dude, that's crazy.
Okay? Protesters, if they're stirring up public opinion, for example, we know women don't have a whole lot of rights in that country.
Right, say I'm holding a sign that said
protesters. Protesters could face 5 years in prison just for stirring up public opinion. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, other groups have called on FIFA, the World Soccer governing body, to set aside $440 million to compensate migrant workers in Qatar for human rights abuses when they were put to work to build all the stadiums for the World Cup.
Gosh.
It's we're like 5 months away from this. Hey, welcome to the tournament here at the World Cup in Qatar. Just don't bring any drugs or you could face the death penalty.
Right. And
think
about this, too. If they are doing that, to their people or their migrant workers or whoever they are. I guess they're not citizens, I guess.
I'm not going to pretend to know how it works over there. But.
And they're setting aside 400 and some odd.
They're asking FIFA to do that, to compensate the migrant workers who were obviously taken advantage of by the government there.
Who's asking?
Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, et cetera.
So FIFA says, we'll give them $440 million.
Well, I don't know if they've said yes or not.
But
they're
anyway,
asking.
That's what I'm saying. If FIFA says, you know what, you're right. We'll give them $440 million for the people who built those stadiums out of that. How many pennies
if any, are going to make it all the way to the poor slob who sat out there in 120-degree temperature pouring concrete.
Yeah.
Zero. That's how many.
Right.
That money's going into the government's pocket. That'll never see the light of day for any of those people.
Yeah.
Come on. If you're going to take somebody's life for, you know, a bag of marijuana, wow, that you're not getting any. They're not getting any of that $400 and some odd million dollars of relief for the people who built the stadium.
People throw around free speech in this country like it's no big deal. You put a sign up in Qatar, you're 5 years in prison.
5 years in prison. Two people are standing there. It constitutes a public gathering. You're done. Gone. Yeah. You're going to
be interesting to see how that all plays out. Qatar not exactly endearing itself to the rest of the world in advance of the World Cup.
And, you know, I say this, too. They're having a lot of the games that they're playing have to be at night.
Well, first of all, they had to move the tournament from summer to late fall.
Right.
Just because you would literally have people passing out on the field at 120 degrees playing a 90-minute soccer
match.
It's
in the desert.
So they moved the tournament from June. It usually starts first week in June, ends like July 4th weekend. They moved it to late November. It starts like 5 days before Thanksgiving.
It's in the winter.
And ends like 4 days before Christmas.
Man. And it's for good reason. It'll still be smoking
hot. It'll be hot. Like 70 or 80s or something.
Oh, it'll be hotter than
maybe
that,
even more. Yeah.
So, okay. Are we getting – it's World Cup. Okay. Olympics, kind of the same thing, you know, kind of every 4 years, big deal. They're really struggling – to do things the way they've always done it.
Yeah,
aren't they?
They've moved.
You're a soccer. You're
they've moved heaven and earth to make this happen in this country.
Now, why?
Because they put up the money.
Right.
They put up the money. Oil money, man. Just put it all up.
I get it. Bring
the tournament here. Because, I mean, they're already projecting the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are hosting the 2026 World Cup. And they're already estimating that the influx to the economy could amount to $5
billion
by hosting the month-long tournament.
And it's between the U.S. and Canada?
No, US and Mexico? The U.S., Canada, and Mexico are all hosting together. The majority of the matches are in the United States. There are a handful in the other two.
All right.
So we shall see. That's going to be interesting. We got to take a break. Back to football, the American version. When we come back, NFL Network's Judy Batista joining us here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, touchdown, Buffalo.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here. All right, hour number two here on a Monday. We are radio only, so not on MSG Network today. We will be back on there tomorrow doing the simulcast. So radio only today. And here in hour number two, we're going to be talking some more football and around the league look as we check in with our good friend, NFL Network writer and reporter Judy Batista joining us on the line. Judy, how you doing? Good to catch up with you.
Good to talk to you guys. How are you?
We're doing okay. We're hanging in here. We're wrapping up the last step of, I guess, the off-season part here with mandatory minicamp starting up here tomorrow, and we're ready to roll. I guess the first thing I wanted to bounce off of you, though, because I know you recently put this together for NFL.com, some eight intriguing storylines to follow at mandatory minicamps. And it's hard, and I know why you put it at number one. It's hard to avoid. It's like blocking out the sun with how, you know, how much attention it has been getting because there is seemingly a new layer to it each and every week. But the Deshaun Watson situation in Cleveland, I have to believe if they did the due diligence that they said they did at the outset, Judy, that some of these new layers that are coming to light are not terribly surprising to them, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is getting uglier and uglier. Not that it wasn't ugly to begin with. How much worse does this get?
Well, I mean, we don't even know where it's headed with the NFL investigation. So the potential for it getting much worse, at least in football terms, is certainly there. Will there come out more legally? I mean, that's possible. Don't forget there's still these 24 civil cases against him
right.
that have to make their way through court. So there could be more stuff emerging out of that. But strictly in football terms, I mean, we don't even know where this is headed. Is he going to be suspended for how long? When will we find that out? Certainly the hope is that, the NFL will be able to tell the Browns and everybody else what they're going to do before training camp starts so that the Browns know going into training camp who their quarterback is going to be. But certainly this is, this is a bad situation. Frankly, it's one that the Browns brought on themselves. They did whatever amount of due diligence they did, and they insist that they feel comfortable with him. And, we'll see if they were right. But certainly the potential for real discipline is on the table. And until that is resolved, I agree with you, that's just going to be the story that blots out the sun for the NFL.
Well, and the question I have is, and they've said or alluded to this, and I'm putting – you can't see it because we're on radio, Judy, but I'm putting up finger quotes about this due diligence they're talking about. How much really was there, or how much could they have done? I mean, they didn't go talk to any of these ladies. They talked to Deshaun Watson, and it seems as though they just are willing to ride out however rough it gets with Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? I mean, they guaranteed him this money, so at some point, he's going to be under center for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I mean, let's be blunt. This was a play for the long term. They talked to people who told them what they wanted to hear. They talked to Deshaun Watson's people, his lawyer, his agent. They did not talk to the accusers or the accuser's attorney. So they talked to people who would tell them what they wanted to hear. And then, they rolled the dice that presumably they think he won't get a lengthy suspension this year. And even if he does, he's still under contract going forward. So this is a long-term play for them. And they can afford to do that. He's a young, extremely talented quarterback. And so if you can compartmentalize all of the off-field things, which is very, very difficult to do, but clearly the Browns made the decision that they could do it. And if you can do that, then you could see why they would make that. I mean, I think if you're looking at it in total, we're going to be asking how wise this decision was for years.
How likely is it that Jimmy Haslam or anybody else with the Browns called Roger Goodell, the commissioner's office, and said, okay, here's what we're thinking about doing. What are what's it look like it's going to do when it comes down and all this is settled? What's the likely suspension you're looking at so we can get our mind around? And if you're going to, because the league could obviously say, listen, we're going to suspend him indefinitely until all 24 cases are sus.
Well, they're not going to be hurt until next year, though.
Right. So, if they're going to say, all right, we're going to suspend him indefinitely until the entire thing's cleared up, you don't want to sign him to this contract then. How likely is it that they got the
Advanced scouting report?
Yeah, exactly. The advanced scouting report from the league about what kind of suspension he was looking at.
I don't think that they got a number from the league. I don't think the league said go ahead because it's only going to be this. I think they looked at the landscape. He was not indicted by the grand jury, so they knew there would not be criminal charges, which was a very big part of it. And you saw the other teams, too. It wasn't just the Browns. The other teams that were in pursuit of him, once the grand juries declined to indict him, like the floodgates opened and everybody said, okay, so there won't be criminal charges. We can deal with the civil charges. That seemed to be the mindset. And, and I think they sort of did the calculation. Roger Goodell had previously said he would not be put on the commissioner's exempt list. So it would either be discipline from the NFL's investigation or nothing. And they were willing to roll the dice that even if there's discipline, it's not going to be debilitating discipline for the Browns.
I mean,
we can go back and forth on whether that was a smart decision. I certainly don't think it was a very smart decision, but you could see from strictly football terms, you could see why they would be willing to roll the dice. Because even if he is suspended indefinitely, even if he's suspended all season, he still is a very young quarterback and a very talented quarterback. And so you could see why they would say, this is a long-term bet we're making.
Last one on this very quickly, because I do want to move on. Do you anticipate the NFL wanting to be on the front side of this with a suspension sooner rather than later, because that's everything that we're hearing right now. But then you also see these extra layers cropping up, and I just wonder if there's some measure of concern on the part of the league, like, well, what if we hand down a suspension and more stuff comes out and it ends up looking lenient? Do you have any sense on what – do they want to be on the front foot with a suspension, Judy?
I think they – well, first of all, I think timing-wise, again, I think they want to get something done this summer so that going into training camp there's some, you know, certainty about his availability. But they can always protect themselves by saying if more information emerges, we will – you know, we will revisit this. I mean,
yeah, that's a good
they're
point.
In the middle of doing that with Dan Snyder. So they don't have to box themselves in. They, whatever they say, you know, suspension, non-suspension, they can always say, look, if more information emerges as this goes through court, we can revisit that.
One of the other things that's, that you've been working on, some of the stuff you've been doing for the NFL, for your writing, is the stuff that about the quarterbacks, which teams have helped themselves, their young quarterbacks, which teams did not do too much. And one of the surprising things, not surprising, but one of the teams that had a surprising offseason in the fact that a lot of people like what they did, and that's the New York Jets. They seem to have nailed the draft, which is in and of itself something they don't do usually. And then to do it in a way that they did, it gives Zach Wilson maybe a chance to be more successful than he was a year ago. Talk to us a little bit about the rankings of which of these top three or four teams really helped their quarterback in a big way this offseason, and two of them happen to be in the AFC East.
Yeah, let's be clear. This does not necessarily – this is not me predicting that the New York Jets are winning the AFC East. This is just the teams that I think, you know, tried the hardest, did the most this offseason to help their guy. And I think the Jets have done that this year and then sort of in the last 2 years. Joe Douglas, when he became the general manager, knew that the Jets had not done much to help Sam Darnold. They just never gave him the support he needed. He was, you know, the wide receivers that Sam Darnold played with were, frankly, substandard. And Douglas knew he could not do that to Zach Wilson. And over the last two seasons, they've really overhauled the entire roster, but especially the offense. I mean, just this offseason, they overhauled the tight ends room. They drafted the guy who may be the, you know, the best wide receiver or the most ready wide receiver in the draft, in Garrett Wilson. Then they drafted, you know, the guy who might be the best running back in this class, in Breece Hall. So they have certainly put and they have rebuilt the offensive line too. So they have certainly put the pieces in place. Obviously, it is all about Zach Wilson's development and can he make the leap? And by the way, he has transformed his body in this offseason. He changed his diet. He's put on a lot of muscle. He's much bigger. So the question now is, can he make the leap in performance? But in the past, you couldn't really tell that about a Jets quarterback because they just weren't playing with a whole lot around him. Well, now they've got the supporting cast around Zach Wilson, and now, you know, we'll see if he can make the jump too.
And I know that the teams you listed second and third on your list there in terms of the five NFL teams that helped their quarterbacks the most this offseason, you had the Dolphins and the Raiders. And while their moves are well noted, how much do you and I know this wasn't a write-up that you did predicting how much success these teams were going to have. You're just strictly looking at quarterback help. I can't help but remind myself that the Dolphins and the Raiders both have coaches who are brand new. They're starting programs in those two respective clubs, and I know history more often than not doesn't result in playoff berths for first-year head coaches. There are certainly exceptions. Do you feel that either of those two teams, and I know we're doing the speculation game here, but that's what we do, have a better chance? Because one team crawled into the playoffs at the end in the Raiders last year, as we know, with an interim coach. And the Dolphins missed, narrowly, but missed. Do either of those teams, you think, have a good shot at a playoff berth in a stacked AFC with new coaches?
Yeah, first of all, the disclaimer here is that the AFC is so loaded that the race for those wild card spots is going to be nuts. But I do think these two teams have a good chance at them. Let's take them separately. First of all, the Miami Dolphins team, pretty close last year with a defensive-minded coach in Brian Flores, who did not have a ton of confidence in Tua, the quarterback. This new head coach is an offensive-minded coach. He's an offensive guru, and he seems to believe in Tua, and they have put pieces around Tua. Another example of a team that needed to improve what was around him. And frankly, even before the Tyreek Hill trade, now that was the blockbuster of the offseason, but they had already done a lot to help Tua. They had signed Teron Armstead as a left tackle. That was a badly needed position. They got Cedric Wilson, the receiver, and then they got Tyreek Hill. They had loaded up on running backs. So they've done a whole lot for Tua, and this is another quarterback who we have to see if he can make the leap. But I do think they are in pretty good position. They were not that far out last year under what were less than ideal circumstances, and I do think they have improved the circumstances for Tua. As for the Raiders, I mean, they are in such a brutal division. I think Josh McDaniels is a tremendous offensive coach, and I certainly think he's going to help Derek Carr. And certainly I think Devontae Adams, you know, his college buddy, they were incredibly productive in college together. I suspect they will be incredibly productive now. It'll certainly help take some of the pressure off Darren Waller, too. So I think they are going to be improved. But, I mean, that division is every game is just going to be must-see TV. So that may catch the Raiders. But I do think that these two teams will be improved because I think they've both gone all in on supporting their quarterbacks.
One of the other teams you mentioned as well, number four on the list, is Arizona Cardinals. And most of the Arizona Cardinals offseason has been had to do with Kyler Murray scrubbing his social media accounts of their likeness. How do you think Kyler Murray's season or outlook will change with what they've done? Because certainly the expectations are much higher with Kyler Murray than they are with Zach Wilson and right. Tua Tagovailoa.
Well, the good news is he appears to be ready to go for minicamp. He's shown up and he was at OTA. So whatever was going on there between him and the club when he scrubbed his social media feed, maybe that has cooled off a little, and that's good news. They haven't given him what he really wants yet, which is the new contract. But, you know, I think, you know, giving him Hollywood Brown is a pretty nice consolation prize. You know, they had wanted to play together. That's a big, big play weapon. And a guy who can be really productive for them. And certainly with, you know, with the absence of DeAndre Hopkins, well, he is suspended. That is going to be a key piece there. I suspect that the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray will come to some sort of agreement. I'm not saying he'll get a new contract, but they'll come to some sort of meeting of the minds. The fact that he has shown up for minicamp, you know, certainly helps him. But you're right, there's much higher expectations for the Arizona Cardinals than there are, and for Kyler Murray than there are for either of those other two teams that we just discussed. But again, they're in a very tough division, right? I mean, the defending champions are in their division. So and the San Francisco 49ers are in their division. So they've got an uphill climb too.
Talking with NFL Network's Judy Batista, last one I've got for you, Judy, is, you know, back to your eight storylines. You did wedge the Bills in there. We appreciate that. You titled it The Arrival of the Buffalo Bills. And I found it interesting because here's the thing. Like, a lot of people felt like that was probably the team playing the best football at the end of the season. And, you know, things just went awry at the final of their divisional playoff against the Chiefs, which we're not going to rehash here. Still too soon. But the grand scheme of it, at least as I see it, is I think you can make the argument that as good as that team was playing last year, on paper this year, they might be even better than they were last season. And that was a team that had a top three offense and the best defense in football. Is it possible to even say that they're better?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, we have to see it on the field, but I think they are an improved roster. Look, I mean, they're the Super Bowl favorite right now. I don't think there's any question. I think if you went around the league, people would point to them. I agree with you. I think they were playing the best football right up until they lost the game. But they have addressed what they needed to address. You know, I mean, Von Miller, right? We don't need to see Von Miller on every down. We just need to see him in those key third down situations when they got to get after the quarterback, which is what undid them at the end of the season. So,
right.
if you get those kinds of plays from Von Miller, you don't need a ton of them. You just need a handful of them at the critical moments. That may be enough to put you over the top. And then I think, you know, they surrounded Josh Allen with even more talent. I love the Jameson Crowder, you know, acquisition. I like O.J. Howard. I think they've done a lot to help, and that's all good. I mean, obviously, it's all about Josh Allen, but he is the least of my concerns, right? I mean, he is as much fun to watch as a quarterback as there is in the league, and I'm very excited to watch this team this year because I do think they're better, and I expect very, very big things from them.
Yeah, and since we're talking about the AFC East, we should give due diligence and equal time to the other opponent
for
the Buffalo Bills, the New England Patriots. you've said it quite rightly. People are kind of withholding judgment on the Patriots.
Right.
I think one of the reasons we all do that still is the fact that, you know, for the longest time, they've looked like this before, quite frankly. They've looked like they've got, you know, a bunch of Division II athletes trying to, you know, step up, and then all of a sudden they end up winning the Super Bowl with those guys, right? So we're not going to throw dirt on them just yet, but man, oh man, it's hard to be optimistic.
It's been strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they've added some pieces that might help the receiving core, which they needed to do. But, we really don't know who's in charge of Mac Jones's development. Like, who's calling the plays? The fact that, maybe it's Matt Patricia, maybe it's Joe Judge, maybe it ends up being somebody else on the coaching staff right now, we don't know. That's not necessarily a bad thing. We just don't know the answer. I'll tell you this. I was discussing this with a friend of mine who is a football fan and knows, you know, the game pretty well. And he said, like, well, it'll probably work out because it's the Patriots. And I think that's sort of the default position we all have. Like, well, this can't really be a disaster because, you know, ultimately Bill Belichick is still in the room. But it is puzzling, and I don't think we're going to know until we see it on the field. Mac Jones, I think, exceeded expectations last year. There's no question about it. But losing Josh McDaniels is not a small loss. That is a big coaching loss, and who picks it up, and to turn his development and the offense over to people who do not have experience doing that is a real roll of the dice for the Patriots. Maybe it works, possibly it works, but we have to see that on the field.
Yeah, Judy, thanks for the time as always. Enjoy your summer. We'll be sure to catch up with you around training camp time.
Looking forward to it. Take care, guys.
All right, Judy Batista joining us here on One Bills Live, NFL Network writer and reporter, has done it for a long time, and you want to get plugged into the league at large, that's what we do. We call Judy.
Read her stuff.
yeah, she's on it. So I don't know about you, Steve, but we've talked about it. The Bills, to us, seem like a stronger team, you know, in terms of how their roster is currently constituted. Obviously, some things have to play out. Kyir Elam has to really push Dane Jackson for a starting job, and the cream rises to the top there. Tre'Davious White has to return to form. James Cook has to put a shot in the arm to the offense. O.J. Howard has to make some contributions. Jamison Crowder has to be his usual 50-catch-a-season self. Those don't seem like gigantic asks, you know, and Von Miller has to come up with the money sack on the money down.
Exactly. We've gone into, and teams around the league go into seasons with bigger questions. And every team's got questions, just like these questions you're just putting forth for the Bills. There are things we don't know about them yet, about, you know, Ken Dorsey, Matt Smiley, all of that stuff, you know, Aaron Cromer. There's a lot of things that have to come into play. But the thing that makes the questions that the Bills have different than questions other teams have is the fact that the answers that we're waiting on are coming from people who have given those answers before. And that's why you have every reason to believe Jameson Crowder, that, you know, he's not going to be a different player than he was with the New York Jets. We don't even have to have him take this huge leap forward. Just be that guy. Because when I watched him play a ton against this team, he's a tough matchup.
Yeah.
And you look at the guy they had last year, Cole Beasley, who played very well for this franchise. Jameson Crowder has a lot more physical gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Beasley's got a feel. He's going to get open. But
Jamison Crowder brings something to the table that both Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley lacked: physical gifts and a little bit of youth. And he brings you both those things that are now gone from this roster from a year ago. Gabe Davis, I don't think there's any question. Most people are like perfectly fine with Gabe Davis being the number two guy now. He earned it. That last game, the way he played in the season, the way he's played every year of his career up till now, 2020, 2021, he has done nothing but get better. So it's been fun to watch him take his place in the roster, and now people are ready for him to have a bigger role. All of that stuff in the mix, all those things offensively, James Cook is the perfect skill set for what the Bills seem to have been missing before. You should go down the list. O.J. Howard, an enormously physically gifted player to go along with Dawson Knox. You just go down the list. All these question marks that happen, all these changes that have happened for the Buffalo Bills are coming to a team that has answered those questions. I mean, even last year, we said it after they got put out of the championship game in Kansas City 2 years ago. They had a lot of roster turnover coming into 2021 last year. Mm-hmm. We're like, well, we'll see. There's some changes here that you don't really like to see from a team that went to the AFC Championship. Man, those changes were great. You know, the changes really helped. So the team even has a history of answering these and filling these question marks in their roster really well. So, you know, the Bills deserve the expectations they've got. The players they brought in give you every reason to be optimistic, but even more optimistic than we should have been had it been the same cast of characters coming back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Judy Batista's right. Every team's going to be a little different. Certainly the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Patriots are going to have reason to be optimistic in their own camps and what they're going to look like. But I'll tell you this right now. They're still chasing the team in Orchard Park. And right now, and at certain times in the past year or two, this team in Orchard Park has been a dot on their horizon. They've been so far away. I mean, you think that the New England Patriots are looking at Orchard Park saying, okay, now we got their number. The last time these two teams played, it was an absolute trip to the woodshed for those guys. Yeah. An absolute embarrassment.
Yeah, it was a clinic.
And do they really feel like they're going to walk in here this year because Mac Jones has got a couple extra training camp under his belt? I have a hard time getting there. I really think
that's the most overlooked thing about the Patriots, and Judy Batista brought it up. No Josh McDaniels, and the guy you're going to replace him with is either Matt Patricia, who's made his living on the defensive side of the ball. I know at the beginning of his career he was on the offensive side of the ball for a brief time, then went over and made his hay in this league on the defensive side of the ball. And Joe Judge, who's been a special teams coach and a head coach.
And a head coach, too.
I know, yeah. But his career is rooted in special teams. So that's what you're going with, one of those two guys to call plays for a second-year quarterback?
They're very experienced. And Joe Judge and Matt Patricia have been at a higher level coming back to the offensive side. They've had to have their hands in the offensive room on both sides because it's their head coach.
Okay.
But I get it. Josh McDaniels was a fixture.
Well, and I'll just put it to you this way. Who would you rather have if you're a second-year quarterback? Would you rather have Matt Patricia and or Joe Judge, or would you rather have Ken Dorsey? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I get it. I don't know.
Give me somebody that's got some kind of quarterback pedigree, like Bill Belichick. What are you doing? You've jumped the shark here, buddy. I mean, you've almost cut your nose off. Coaching football. We'll just plug anybody in over there to help Mac Jones in his second year as a quarterback. Well, I mean, holy cow, are you putting a lot of trust in the guys. One guy you wouldn't even put on your staff last year, and he's worked with you before.
Well,
you had Matt Patricia as an advisor upstairs. You wouldn't even put him back on your staff. Now he's going to call plays on offense?
Brownie, the reason they did that is because he's still making money from the Detroit Lions. He's making $5 million a year as your water boy. If you can put him on, it doesn't matter. You don't have to pay him. You come back and you give him a title, let him work, and you don't even have to pay the guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And you know what he's doing. I mean, Belichick's 70. So you know what he's saying? He's saying, listen, you're going to be in a short list of guys who have a chance to take over this spot when I'm done. So if you want to come back, get back in the building and start working towards it, now's your chance. So he comes back and does it for literally, he may not, they're not even paying the guy.
Are we thinking, now you're getting me into an area I didn't think I was going to be going. Are we really thinking that when Belichick is done, that Robert Kraft is going to go with Matt Patricia or Joe Judge? Two guys that flamed out in Detroit and New York? I can't see that as Bob Kraft material.
Let me just remind you that when he got the team, he took a chance and I got flamed out in Cleveland.
Right.
Bill
Belichick. I get it. So, that's a valid point.
So, yeah. And I think by that time, Robert Kraft will have Robert Kraft will have
more realistic expectations because his team will be a middle-of-the-road club.
Also, he's going to give Bill the chance to pick his guy. Say, all right, Bill, you did it. Who do you want? Who's your next guy? Now, Bill may pick his kid.
Oh, dear Lord.
You know, but I think that's part of the thing. You know, maybe Robert Kraft, because Robert Kraft is, you know, one of those kind of relationship. He's like a guy like that. He'll take care of his people like he always has. But he may give Bill the benefit of the ability to pick his successor.
It's fun to talk about the Patriots this way. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah.
We have to take a break here, though, unfortunately. So we will step aside here. When we come back, more of your thoughts on the tweet sheet. And if we have some time, a little NFL true-false. That's all coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, final half hour of the program here on a Monday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Heading back to the tweet sheet, where we were asking you today, when mandatory minicamp begins tomorrow here at One Bills Drive, what do you want to hear about from day one? We already know that it's been reported by ESPN's Adam Schefter that Jordan Poyer will be in attendance, so that one is off the table. So give us something else that would be music to your ears from day one of mandatory minicamp. And Seth on the tweet sheet says, I want to hear about the top two picks. Elam and Cook should both be major contributors this season, hoping to hear more about their potential utilization. Also interested to hear about the kinds of sets, formations Dorsey is using in the early stages. Well, that, unfortunately, is something we cannot report on. That is prohibited from being publicized. So that we can't bring to you as much as we would like. With training camp open, though, there is a good chance you'll be getting information on that come late July, early August, although that's to be determined. But yes, Elam and Cook are going to be two interesting additions to this roster, offensively and defensively, respectively. How much they're asked to contribute, I think, is going to be even more interesting, and it's going to be predicated on how quick they are on the uptake.
Absolutely. Certainly, we've seen their skill set, and you can even go back and look at their college highlights. That's the reason they got drafted, was their skill set. Elam, I think, is really going to push to be the guy. Now, I don't want to throw Dane Jackson under the bus, because that guy can play.
And like certainly, Dane Jackson.
And you had the man crush on him all last offseason.
Still do.
So, here's the thing. If Tre'Davious White isn't ready, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Dane Jackson, Kier Elam to start the season.
Oh, yeah.
And let's go.
And Taron Johnson in the slot.
Right, and Taron Johnson. Just let's go. I'm okay with that. I'm okay, particularly with this roster. I think they'll be fine. Trey's a phenomenal player, and even if he comes back, plays through all the training camp, goes through the preseason, all that stuff, you're still going to start the season thinking, man, I hope he hold up, that kind of thing. But their depth is going to be a real asset to them in the secondary. So, yeah, Kier Elam, I think, is going to be an absolutely plug-and-play type of player from the word go. And Cook, he's the guy I got the man crush on this offseason. That's the guy that I coveted in the draft.
You're not alone.
And I see him being as good
or the same type of player as Alvin Kamara is for the New Orleans Saints. And if Ken Dorsey has that toy or that tool in his toolbox, this offense all of a sudden is, yeah, it's pretty much unstoppable. You know, I just think it's going to be that good.
Yeah, they'll have more answers than any defense they'll face.
It's just a question of, and here's the thing, it's going to be like as soon as they play one. Last year it's like, okay, what can we do? All right, we'll put this guy on the field, that guy on the field, and we'll see what they. It's going to be like we're going to put our guys out there, and by watching film, we're going to know the matchup you're going to give us, and we're going to know exactly which guy we're going to throw it to, and we know what you're going to adjust to, and we know what we're going to do in that, you know? And I think there's going to be less experimentation. If you get a guy like Cook out there, I think they're just going to say, okay, here we go. That's what they're going to do. Here we go. Let's go. And they're just going to plinkety, plink, plink, boom down the field.
Plinkety, plink, plink, boom down the field. I like that.
And it's they're going to be impossible to stop.
Might have to patent that or copyright that, Steve. Plinkety, plink, plink, boom down the field.
You like that? A little cadence? Plinkety, plink, plink. Here's the thing.
Plink, plink,
here's
boom
the beauty
down
of being
field.
On radio only.
Yeah, we're right by
we'll
your
put
whiteboard.
This on my whiteboard's right here. I'm going to write plinkety, plink, plink,
plink,
plink down the field.
Boom. Don't plink, forget boom. Plinkety, plink, 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 boom.
Plink, plink. Yeah. Okay.
All right. You work on that. I'll get to the next comment on the tweet sheet. Faith says, I truthfully like to hear a J-Po extension. Seems fitting since he'll reportedly be in for camp. As much as I think we'd all like to hear that, because that would mean any issue that Jordan Poirier would have in playing this year for the Bills would be out the window if there's a new deal. I don't know how optimistic I would be that it gets done this week.
No, I wouldn't either. But here's the thing. You're right. If it's going to get done, it's going to get done after preseason game number three, before that.
Well, I mean, let's.
Because that's where they do it.
Let's think about the history of Brandon
exactly.
Bean getting stuff done. Veterans on this roster typically get stuff done in August. That's when they usually get things accomplished. And, you know, who else right now would be on that list? I suppose if you want to be proactive with Dawson Knox, maybe that's one that could get done. Because typically the guys that get signed – in August, by this team, are players usually with a year left on their contract. Tre'Davious White,
right.
Deion Dawkins, you know, run down
Tremaine.
The list.
Tremaine Edmonds.
Tremaine Edmonds, I guess, could be a candidate, set to play under the fifth-year option. Ed Oliver, although he's got another year next year, so maybe that he's more for the August 2023,
right.
Instead of August 2022. Yeah, I don't know
if
that's going to happen in short order.
If Poirier gets an – don't you think it's kind of this mentality, Brownie, if they do Poirier, that is the final gear that needs to be shifted to head into the regular season. You know what I mean? That'll be like, okay, there is absolutely no brakes. It's all gas, no brakes for this crew. Here they go. Then it'll all be about just getting to the season healthy and getting on with it. That is really the final cog in this wheel, right? Maybe Tre'Davious White. We'll be waiting on Trey to see how he does in training camp, but we'll find out early in training camp what his timeline's going to be.
Yeah.
And then that'll be answered.
Wesley on the tweet sheet says, what do we expect the punters to be working on in minicamp? How do off-season workouts impact them? Well, they're just like any other player.
Yeah.
They're just doing their job. We were privy to some punt periods last week, or maybe it was the week prior, between Matt Araiza and Matt Hawk. And I know everybody's kind of hung up on the holds, which will be a part of this competition, no question. But, you know, punt performance and being able to flip the field with a measure of consistency that special teams coach Matthew Smiley, as well as head coach Sean McDermott, expects is going to be of paramount importance, particularly when it comes to the preseason games.
You think about it, what they work on is all different kinds of punts they could possibly hit. The direction of the punts, the distance of the punts, the
hang
types
time.
Of punts,
hang time, high and short, low and long.
Aussie
style to both side, both corners of the end zone, right and left.
Directional
inside
punter.
The, you know, high hang time inside the numbers, outside the numbers. They'll be working on catching snaps. They'll be working on the consistency of the drop that they put, you know, the ball comes out of their hands.
Do you know what other factor, that we really haven't discussed this with respect to the punting competition, that I think is part of it because of Matt Araiza's versatility? I mean, that kid's an athlete in every sense of the word. As we know, he has been a field goal kicker. He primarily was a field goal kicker going into San Diego State, and then because of his athleticism and prowess punting the football, he was seen more as a punting prospect at the NFL level than a place-kicking prospect. But what about this, Steve? What if Matt Araiza can do kickoffs, too? Because he has done it.
Right.
How much of a leg up would that give him if, I mean, if Matt Hawk is slightly better in the punting category, but Araiza brings other stuff
it's
to the
okay.
table, does it weigh in at all or no?
A little. But you already got a guy that
I know
pounds
that.
It. So some, like, you know, if Bass tweaks a hammy or quad or something, and he can kick field goals that week, but he doesn't want to go hard for, you know, okay. Yeah, that's a small thing on this roster because of Bass.
Right.
But there are other scenarios.
If you had an older kicker.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not so much here. I think the problem is, I think the real thing is, how much work is Araiza giving himself on one knee, catching short snaps, and getting the ball down for his kicker?
Yeah.
That's something he's got to work on and should perfect. And if I'm him, I'm doing 150 of those a day.
Yeah.
Just every day. Just like clock. Just part of your routine. Just take them and get them down.
Yeah, even if you got to set up a jugs machine.
Yeah. And that's what they do. They set up a jug machine, just keep pumping them through. You put it down on one finger. Once you do, you take it, throw that one away, and get the next one.
Yep.
They need to work on it, and just to get where it's second nature. So that's what I would, if I'm Matt Araiza, that's the thing I work on. But you're right. All the other stuff gives him a leg up.
Break time for us. Steve and I will close things up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collide Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Steve, so mandatory minicamp starts tomorrow. We'll be out there watching. What's the first thing your eyes are going to gravitate towards, do you think, tomorrow? Mandatory minicamp day one.
Oh, it's going to be all about the offense for me. I want to see how the new guys, Crowder, Cook, personnel usage, O.J. Howard, all the new guys. I want to see those guys, and I get it. So that's what I'm going to watch.
Yeah. I'm
not going to watch too much because they start at 12:30. We got to be out there for like 5 minutes before we come in.
Yeah, that'll be tough. We got a show to do.
Talk to McDermott about changing that.
Not always good when work gets in the way of trying to watch the Bills.
That's all right, though. It's what we do, bro.
Work gets in the way of work. All right, we got to take a break here because we're done for the day. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 and fill you in on day one of minicamp. We'll see you then.